Welcome to the Core Principles Podcast. Thank you for tuning in, and we hope you'll enjoy this lively discussion of relevant topics, which we attempt to examine through the lens of unchanging, objective truth. Here is the host of the Core Principles Podcast, Clay Howerton.
Thank you, Suzanne. Today on Core Principles, I'm going to talk about a concept in our system of justice called the reasonable, prudent person. I look at this particularly in the context of the indictment of President Trump. First, let's think about the fact that this has happened. President Trump went to New York on the 4th of April to hear charges against him, brought by the New York District Attorney, Alvin Bragg. The indictment lists 34 things, but the things listed in the indictment are not the crime which Bragg claims is the justification for this proceeding. That obviously seems bizarre, so a reporter asked District Attorney Bragg about that. Quote, "The indictment does not specifically say what the crimes were, what laws were broken," end quote. Now that seems like an important and basic question from my perspective as a layperson and a citizen, but here's what District Attorney Bragg said in response to that important inquiry. Quote, "The indictment doesn't specify because the law does not so require," end quote. So listeners, we, and more importantly, President Trump and his lawyers, do not know what the actual allegation of a violation of any law is. The Sixth Amendment to the United States says in part, "In all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall be informed of the nature and cause of the accusation," to which most of us citizens would say, duh. Imagine if you were the defendant or lawyer for a defendant. You know you're supposed to be considered innocent until proven guilty, but you reasonably expect the prosecution is going to make allegations against you at trial, against which you must defend, so that the jury is at least not persuaded there's no reasonable doubt you're guilty. If you don't even know what those allegations are, then how would you prepare that defense? Speaking of the fact that defendants should be presumed innocent by the jury, the former Speaker of the House of Representatives, Nancy Pelosi, said this about President Trump's indictment. He, quote, "has the right to a trial to prove innocence," end quote. Wow. Only an evil person could say the things Pelosi says or do the things Pelosi does. Her statement about proving innocence is truly perverse and proves she has never been qualified to have any say in anything that ever happens in the United States. What a shame that such people as her exist. Meanwhile, much speculation has been put forth about what crime the district attorney will allege. And by the way, it is reportedly possible in New York to reveal the actual criminal allegation after the indictment by up to 15 days. That sounds very stupid, but since New York is run by leftists and so-called liberals, maybe that is actually the way of it. Speculation about the charge has been largely focused on the person named Stephanie Clifford, who took on the name Stormy Daniels to obscure her involvement in shameful activities as her way of making money. She threatened to slander Donald Trump days before the 2016 election, in such a way and with such timing that it could not be effectively rebutted and would therefore affect the outcome of that election. Such slanderous allegations frequently happen against wealthy or famous people because the wealthy often calculate that paying for a non-disclosure agreement is less costly than fighting the false allegation publicly. Apparently, $130,000 was given to Stephanie Clifford to thwart her attempted election interference, and that may be the object of the clerical issues at issue in the not actually criminal indictment against President Trump. However, between the time that threat was made in 2016 against Donald Trump and now, enough has been revealed that Stephanie Clifford has been found legally liable to pay Donald Trump for Clifford's wrongful accusations and insinuations. In fact, and hilariously, almost at the exact moment the district attorney in New York, Alvin Bragg, was delivering his not actually criminal indictment against President Trump, the Ninth Circuit Court issued an order, quote, filed order, attorney's fees in the amount of $121,972.56 are awarded in favor of Donald J. Trump against Stephanie Clifford. See Ninth Circuit R39-1.9, end quote. Now, I mentioned that such extortionist allegations against wealthy or potentially powerful people happen all too frequently. Regarding potentially powerful people, you can hearken back to the outrageous lies brought against Brett Kavanaugh only when he was nominated for the Supreme Court. You may have missed that even the Associated Press reported on this in November 2018. Headline, another Kavanaugh accuser admits to fabricating rape story. From that article, Kavanaugh accuser admitted this week that she made up her lurid tale, saying it was a tactic to try to derail the judge's confirmation to the Supreme Court. She admitted to the false allegation, and she said she has never actually met Justice Kavanaugh. And as it relates to Clifford's threatened extortion of Trump, you may recall that in May of 2018, President Trump wrote on Twitter about this general concept. Quote, Mr. Cohen, an attorney, received a monthly retainer, not from the campaign and having nothing to do with the campaign, from which he entered into, through reimbursement, a private contract between two parties known as a non-disclosure agreement, or NDA. These agreements are very common among celebrities and people of wealth. In this case, it's full force and effect and will be used in arbitration for damages against Miss Clifford, also known as Daniels. The agreement was used to stop the false and extortionist accusations made by her, end quote. And indeed, Trump won those damages, which Clifford still owes him. And on the 4th of April, while Trump was being arraigned, Clifford was again ordered to pay Trump attorney fees in addition to those damages. So if the district attorney in New York is hanging his so-called untested legal strategy on that, then it's easy to understand why many Democrats are not happy that this is happening. However, given the fact that leftists, so-called liberals, and Democrats have no morals, no ethics, no decency, they will do anything to get their way. And their way includes good people like Brett Kavanaugh never getting on the Supreme Court, as well as an anti-establishment outsider like Donald Trump never getting into the executive branch leadership. They just can't stop themselves from stepping on rakes. So the entire speculative basis for the underlying crime District Attorney Bragg is basing his not actually criminal indictment on is not only not a crime, but President Trump has been so vindicated in that matter that his extortionist has been ordered by the most liberal circuit court in America to pay President Trump. What did this unprecedented action of indicting a president of the United States actually do? Well, by doing an unprecedented thing, that makes it no longer unprecedented. In other words, District Attorney Alvin Bragg has just, whether purposefully or unwittingly, established precedent, and that should spell trouble for Democrats. Let's look at some ways that it should spell trouble for a few specific Democrats: Al Gore, Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton, and Barack Obama. Let's start with notorious and ridiculous fraudster Al Gore. According to the New York Times, the basis for the indictment's claim of falsifying business records would require the records were falsified to cover up another crime. Since the speculation about Bragg's undisclosed underlying crime points towards a Federal Election Commission violation, it's worth noting that New York, and thus District Attorney Bragg, has no jurisdiction in such a matter. Here's the New York Times expressing trepidation over the apparent strategy. Quote, "Although the specific charges remain unknown, Mr. Bragg's prosecutors have zeroed in on a hush money payment and false records created by Mr. Trump's company, an attempt to combine a charge relating to false records with an election violation relating to payment to Ms. Daniels would be based on a legal theory that has yet to be evaluated by judges, raising the possibility that a court could throw it out," end quote. Well, how does this relate to the fraudster Al Gore? He raised money from Chinese sources, which was not only illegal, but the worst kind of illegal. It was treasonous. And his claimed defense was that there was no controlling legal authority regarding those election crimes. The wonderful and brilliant late great Charles Krauthammer wrote about this on March 7, 1997. He observed in part, quote, "Controlling legal authority. Whatever other legacies Al Gore leaves behind, he forever bequeaths this newest weasel word to the lexicon of American political corruption." Gore is talking here about his phone calls from the White House soliciting Democratic campaign contributions. Now, he cannot say, "I have broken no law," because Section 607 of Title 18 of the United States Criminal Code states very clearly there is to be no solicitation of campaign funds in federal government offices. Gore broke the law, as is written, as is understood, and as is practiced. His defense? Apparently, that there are no cases testing that law, so there. Well, the problem for Gore is not just that he is taking refuge in one of the flimsiest legal confections of our time, but that this flimsy confection is directly contradicted by his boss. Here is President Clinton 1 week earlier defending his 103 White House coffees, read fundraisers. "We got strict advice," President Clinton said, "about, well, legal advice about what the rules were, and everyone involved knew what the rules were. There was no solicitation at the White House," end quote. Now, of course, Clinton was lying, as he always did, since those White House coffees existed solely as fundraisers. But the point of his quote, whether intended or not, is that the legal restrictions against what Al Gore did were well known. And it does also tie to the attempt by Bragg to get Trump, because it will be impossible to prove that Trump knew that what he characterized as a common occurrence for famous or wealthy citizens, which he was during the campaign as private citizen Donald Trump, was somehow an FEC, Federal Election Commission, violation. With no intent, there is no possible crime in this case. And Trump's lack of knowledge about the FEC rules as it might relate to defusing the Clifford extortion is, of course, bolstered by the fact that his lawyer told him it was legal and his lawyer was actually the one who made the transaction for the NDA. That aspect of the case gets more intriguing when you consider that both Trump's lawyer, Michael Cohen, and Clifford's lawyer, Michael Avenatti, were prosecuted, convicted, and in prison for other matters. In fact, Cohen pled guilty to a charge related to the election just to avoid conviction on other crimes that could have put him away for the rest of his life. It's very logical to argue that even though Cohen could have been innocent of the election charge to which he pled, he took that deal as the best option out of his potential legal jeopardy. The prosecutors have proven to be politically motivated, so focusing only on that least significant legal matter made sense because it was the most significant political matter. The Federal Election Commission has already destroyed this potential path that Attorney General Bragg may be pursuing. This will get just a little bit complicated, but stick with me. If the crime that Bragg has not yet disclosed, which is the basis for the 34 counts of improper bookkeeping, is actually the payment to Stephanie Clifford, then that has already been ruled to be no crime at all. Case dismissed, and here's the proof of that. Keep in mind, as I detail this, that the only evidence that the diverted payment in question was for the purpose of influencing a federal election is Michael Cohen signing a guilty plea that he did not write under the advice of his attorney because it would get him out of culpability for his actual criminal jeopardy unrelated to President Trump. Keep in mind also that New York has no jurisdiction in federal election crime allegations. It happens that the Federal Election Commission has already investigated and determined that neither Donald Trump nor anyone else committed this purported election crime. That is not simply that the FEC had reasonable doubt. Rather, they had no reason to believe that any such election crime ever happened in relation to the Trump campaign. The Federal Election Commission had considered a complaint brought against the Trump campaign and Treasurer Bradley T. Crate. And here are some relevant parts of the response. Quote, the complaint in Matters Under Review 7319 suggests that a $130,888.33 lease payment to Trump Tower Commercial LLC made on December 21, 2016 and reported on the committee's 2016 year of end report filed on January 31, 2017 might have been for payment to Ms. Clifford. That disbursement was actually for the combined costs of the committee's rental of a headquarters, $128,613.33, and part of campaign store space at Trump Tower, and was made under the terms of amended lease agreements executed between the committee and Trump Tower Commercial LLC after Election Day 2016. This from Crate Affidavit, Section 8. Further, a long line of commission precedent establishes that, as a matter of law, the type of third-party payment alleged in the complaint, even if made, would not be considered an in-kind contribution to the committee because it is not a campaign-related transaction made for the purpose of influencing a federal election. And further, this commission, the FEC, has been unwilling to extend its jurisdiction to reach such payments, recognizing that they fall beyond the campaign finance matters subject to its regulation. End quote. And how did the Federal Election Commission respond ultimately? This is from their response. Quote, disposition. The commission decided by a vote of 4-1 to close the file. The commission failed to find reason to believe that Donald J. Trump knowingly or willfully violated any of the statutes he allegedly violated. That last bit was paraphrased because they go on for 20 paragraphs detailing all the allegations. All of them, the commission says they found no reason to believe that Trump did any of that. Further, The commission dismisses the allegations with respect to Trump Tower Commercial LLC. The commission dismisses the allegations that Michael D. Cohen, Donald J. Trump, Donald J. Trump for President Incorporated, violated 52 United States Code Section 30114B by converting campaign funds for personal use through payments with respect to Ms. Clifford. End of quote. So the FEC has already looked into that. There was nothing there. There is no basis there. And if that's what Bragg is basing his 34 non-criminal parts of his indictment, then the case is over before it even starts. Now, wait for some Democrats to argue that just because the Federal Election Commission dropped this allegation against Trump, that still doesn't mean Bragg hasn't got legal justification for claiming the exact thing the FEC dropped as his basis against Trump. Because they just can't stop themselves. But those Democrats who would make such a spurious argument might want to check with Hillary Rodham Clinton first. Because no one should want this case against Trump to be dropped more than Hillary wants it to be dropped. Why? Because the FEC also dropped a campaign violation matter of hers, but hers wasn't for some $130,000 payment for a non-disclosure agreement to thwart attempted slander. No, Hillary laundered $83 million through state party offices to the Democrat National Committee to facilitate higher than legally allowed contributions to the Hillary for America campaign. Donors would give to the Hillary Victory Fund. Those dollars would be dispersed to 40 states to hide excessive donations. Then that money would be sent back to the Democrat National Committee and Hillary for America campaign. And the FEC has the receipts. They know she is actually guilty, but they dropped it anyway. They know that Trump is completely innocent, and they reluctantly dropped that too, even though they hate his guts. Actually, as we learned through Special Counsel John Durham's investigation, the Federal Election Commission had found that the DNC and Hillary for America had paid fines to resolve that case. Both the DNC and HFA have been proven already to have falsified business records to conceal from the Federal Election Commission that it was paying Fusion GPS and Michael Steele for the fraudulent disinformation actions against Donald Trump. Remember, Russia, Russia, Russia hoax. And then the DNC and Hillary for America called that legal services in their documentation. They are guilty of what they falsely accused Trump of, but theirs was actual also real criminal activity where Trump's is not even that. Hillary had better pray that this bogus case against Trump gets dropped quickly. Because now that Bragg has established precedent, the district attorneys in any or all of those 40 states can charge the Democrat National Committee and Hillary Clinton for her crimes. And speaking of Clinton crimes that should get prosecuted, now that Pandora, also known as Alvin Bragg, has opened that box, how about the crimes of William Jefferson Clinton? There are many, so let's just remember this one. Bill Clinton facilitated the sale of nuclear ballistic missile guidance technology to the communist Chinese in exchange for illegal campaign finances for his re-election bid. Did you catch that? Let me repeat that statement because it describes a crime known as capital treason. Bill Clinton facilitated the sale of nuclear ballistic missile guidance technology to the communist Chinese in exchange for illegal campaign finances for his re-election bid. Now, this would take a long time to detail, so let me just offer the outline from memory without notes. Bernard Schwartz was a leading contributor to Bill Clinton's first campaign. Clinton owed him big time. Bernard Schwartz was the CEO of Loral Aerospace, which made ballistic missile guidance systems. Well, the Chinese wanted to buy such guidance systems, but obviously no sane person would authorize such a sale, as it could put United States cities under credible threat of nuclear targeting. Clinton's Secretary of Defense and Secretary of State, in spite of being willing to go along with almost anything Clinton might want, both said he must not authorize such a sale from Loral to China. But Clinton owed his campaign donor, and of course he could care less about the horrific consequences it might cause America. So Clinton chose to make the validation of such a sale go only through the Secretary of Commerce, never mind defense and state. The Secretary of Commerce at that time was Ron Brown, who also happened to be Clinton's campaign manager. Ron said the sale could go just as Clinton wanted. And then Ron died very mysteriously. But Bernie Schwartz got his payback from Clinton, and America is less safe as a result. Bill Clinton is guilty of capital treason. And now there's precedent for prosecuting former presidents. How about Barack Hussein Obama? We know he hates America since he has been trying to, as he calls it, fundamentally transform this nation. Nothing could be more anti-anything than trying to fundamentally transform that thing. But let's focus on one of Obama's lesser crimes because it relates to campaign financing and because it was in the news just this month. From the Associated Press, 3rd of April, 2023, excerpts from an article called DiCaprio Testifies in Money Laundering Case of Fuji's Rapper. Quote, movie star Leonardo DiCaprio testified in federal court Monday morning as part of a trial involving international money laundering, bribery, and a prominent rap artist, Prakasral Michelle, a founding member of the iconic 1990s hip-hop group called the Fugees, is accused of funneling money from a fugitive Malaysian financer through straw donors to Barack Obama's 2012 re-election campaign. At the heart of the case is Lo Tak Zhou, usually known as Joe Lo. He is accused of masterminding an international money laundering and bribery scheme. DiCaprio's connection with the case comes from his years-long relationship with Lo, who was one of the primary financers of the movie The Wolf of Wall Street. Lo is currently a fugitive, but has maintained his innocence. From June to November 2012, Lo directed more than $21.6 million to be moved from foreign entities to Michelle's accounts, that's the rapper, in order to funnel money into the 2012 presidential election for Barack Obama. Michelle then paid about 20 straw donors and conduits so they could make the donations in their names and conceal where the money actually came from, according to the indictment. DiCaprio recalled a casual conversation with Lo, in which Lo told him he intended to make a large contribution to Obama's re-election campaign. DiCaprio said it was a significant sum, something to the tune of $20 to $30 million, and I said, wow, that's a lot of money. After DiCaprio, multiple witnesses testified that they had been approached by Michelle, the rapper, to make shadow contributions to the Obama campaign. Richard Kromika, an investment banker, said Michelle told him he had maxed out his legal contribution limit and asked Kromika to make a donation on his behalf. Kromika said Michelle sent $80,000 to donate. In other cases, acquaintances of Michelle were offered invitations to high roller fundraising dinners and told their attendance would be sponsored by Michelle and his associates. Jack Brewer, a former NFL player, said Michelle wired him $32,000 to cover his entry into one such Obama fundraiser, but he immediately felt nervous about the arrangement and sent that money back. Brewer testified, "It just felt funny to me. You're just sending me money and it's not a loan and I'm supposed to donate it to a campaign? That sounds shady to me. End quote. Well, now that the precedent of indicting presidents has been set by Alvin Bragg, Barack Obama should be very, very afraid. Because unlike Donald Trump, Barack Obama is actually guilty. But none of these other cases change another horrific aspect of the Trump case. Trump cannot get a fair trial in Alvin Bragg's New York, just as no conservative could get a fair trial in any liberal bastion. Consider for proof of this the way innocent patriots, also known as conservatives, have been treated in Washington, D.C. They were invited into the Capitol building on January 6, 2021, by the Capitol Police. They peacefully assembled, even as leftists from Antifa and others stirred up as much mayhem as possible, including breaking glass. The Antifa glassbreakers and the Fed plants, who tried to stir up as much trouble as possible, have faced no legal actions, but the peaceful patriots have been locked up for hundreds of days without trial. They have been threatened with such horrific treatment and charges to face at trial that many have pleaded guilty to things they never did. One example of that is Jacob Chansley. He pled guilty to avoid possibly being convicted of serious crimes, but he didn't commit any crime. He's been released now, thankfully, but even though we now have all had the opportunity to see the proof of his innocence, it's horrifying to realize that the January 6th committee deliberately hid that truth for the purpose of falsely accusing conservatives. The tactic of terrifying people with outrageous charges and locking them in pre-trial confinement for hundreds of days is truly evil. But that is the way all Democrats, leftists, and so-called liberals are, proven by the fact that they are actually doing those things. And the good people know they cannot get a fair trial in the den of wickedness known as D.C. And that is why some have opted to forego their right to a trial by jury and opted instead for a bench trial before only a judge. The odds of getting a decent, also known as non-leftist, judge in D.C. are also small, but they're not zero. One falsely accused patriot chose a bench trial, and he told the judge he was not guilty on account of the fact that the Capitol Police opened the door and invited him and others to come inside. And the judge acknowledged the truth of that and let that accused go free. What does it take to get a fair trial? Well, for one thing, it takes jury members who are reasonable, prudent persons. When I was at the Air Force Academy, we were required to study the basics of the law. I was taught about the concept of the reasonable, prudent man as being a standard at law. It made perfect sense to me, and I was encouraged that our system had such a concept as part of it. When a person is accused of violating a law, a valid question must be, would a reasonable, prudent person do that? Would a reasonable, prudent person know that doing that would violate the law? But here's the problem. Think about leftists and so-called liberals and truly evaluate whether any such person could be considered a reasonable, prudent person. Because the answer is obviously no, then in areas where leftists and so-called liberals dominate juries, there is no hope for our system that relies on them to result in actual justice. I've heard that our justice system could be described as the worst system in the world, except for every other system in the world. And that was true for a long time. But as with many aspects of our system, where we want to have it be of, by, and for the people, we necessarily rely on the people being generally good, freedom-loving, God-fearing people. That's why John Adams observed, quote, "Our Constitution was made only for a moral and religious people. It is wholly inadequate to the government of any other," end quote. Leftism is tyranny, and leftists cannot long coexist with liberty if they are dominating the political landscape. Have a blessed day, and may God bless America.
Core Principles Podcast is produced in Paducah, Kentucky by Real Productions. Music is by Late July, L-E-I-G-H-T July. You can find our music on all streaming services or at latejuly.com. Thank you for joining us today for this episode of the Core Principles Podcast. Please visit core.buzzsprout.com for more information, and please share with your friends. We look forward to visiting with you again on our next episode.